C1R.
Number 10B.
So I read further, and I'm wondering what she's now telling about this perfect idea man. And she takes up a biblical quotation from the sixth day of creation, which is man, as you remember. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Well, so somehow she indicates here that man, as the image and likeness of God, which he has already shown in the preceding paragraph, that he is the image and likeness of God, and adds to it that it has dominion. So in a way, I begin to wonder what this dominion is all about that she brings out here. And so I feel, well, I guess she will go on and explain something about this biblical passage. Perhaps also I remember from my study of Genesis that this passage is from the tone of truth as soul. In the layout of the days of creation, of the sixth day, it's truth as soul. And so I wonder what she's going to tell me. And at once I see, oh yes, that's exactly what she's going to say. Man is incapable of sin, sickness, and death. Quite a new subject compared with the first paragraph. He's incapable of sin, sickness, and death. That gives me at once a strong sense of the soul sense of man, that man is, as idea, an unchangeable, sinless idea, that he cannot change, that he cannot sin, that he cannot fall from his higher state. So man is incapable of sin, sickness, and death. The real man cannot depart from holiness. Again, I catch the tone of soul that he cannot depart from, he cannot fall away from his high estate. He is unchangeable in soul. Nor can God, by whom man is evolved, engender the capacity or freedom to sin. Oh, well, it becomes always clearer and clearer what she wants to bring out, that man is incapable of sin, that he has not the capacity to sin, that he has not the freedom to sin, that he is actually in the bonds of soul, that on the bonds of sinlessness, and he cannot fall away from that sinlessness. He cannot fall from a sinless state to a sinful state. And perhaps my eye goes right to the marginal heading, man unfallen. I feel here supported by the text to see, oh yes, that's what she wants to show, that man is always at the point of sinlessness and he can never fall. Man is never a fallen man. I read on, a mortal sinner. Oh, here it is again. Now comes by juxtaposition the very opposite. Man cannot sin. Now what is a mortal sinner? And I feel, oh, that's very good. Now she tells me the very opposite and gives me a true picture of the sinless man and of that concept which seems to be a mortal sinner. So a mortal sinner is not God's man. Aha! Uh-huh. So he's not identified with God's man. And that gives me a strong sense that he must be the counterfeit. Oh, yes, here he says it. Mortals are the counterfeits of immortals. Can you see, you actually can guess what the next statement is when you reason with her, because she's very clear in the reasoning. Therefore, she said, oh yes, therefore mortals are counterfeits. You see, what is a counterfeit? A counterfeit is the opposite of true identity. If we just know the synonymous terms, you just always hear soul, 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 soul. Soul, you hear. Man cannot sin, man is not fallen, man cannot depart from his sinlessness. Therefore, the opposite of it, the sinner, is the opposite of that sinless state of soul. He's the counterfeit, not the identity of soul. So that the mortal is actually what? They are the children of the wicked one, or the one evil. Whenever she speaks about the wicked one, about the maliciousness, then it's always the counterfeit of soul, of the sinlessness of soul, or the one evil, which declares that man begins in dust or as a material embryo. So I say to myself, that's nice. Now she has really depicted that mortal man, that material man, that thinks that he starts in an embryo, in a material embryo, begins in dust or anywhere, and that he is a mortal and he sins and he is a wicked one, and that is not man, that's not the identity of man, that's the counterfeit of man. But the true identity of man is what the scriptural note has said, that he is the image and likeness of God. So in this paragraph I begin to see, oh, that's nice. So first, in the answer to what is man, Mrs. Eddy has first shown the pure picture of the spiritual idea man in its perfection. Now she shows that mortals are the very counterfeit of that perfect man. And I read on, in divine science, God and the real man are inseparable as divine principle and idea. Well, that seems to be a bit unexpected. And so, when I come to a sentence that is unexpected, I think I leave it as it is and think about it later on. The main thing is that within the big paragraph, most of the paragraph has, I have been able to catch the tone. And so if right away I don't catch the tone of a sentence, I don't make a big deal about it. I just feel later on it may fit in. Later on I may see the reason. The main thing is that I first see the big red thread going through a text, and so I have the freedom to leave such a sentence first aside. And I go on quite happy with what I have found, and not distressed that I don't know why this sentence comes in here. And I begin to read further. Error, urged to its final limits, is self-destroyed. Oh, this is new. What has that to do with man? He speaks about error and not about man. I wonder what she's trying to tell me. That error, urged to its final limits, is self-destroyed. And perhaps I have a feeling, perhaps I have not the feeling, that perhaps she wants to say, look here, after she has shown what is the true man and what is the wrong sense of man, that perhaps she wants to indicate that the wrong sense of man, when urged to its final limits, will somehow disappear. Oh, that would be nice, actually. Huh? And therefore, she would tell us that there is a Christ at work, that if there is a true idea about man, then that will have the Christ, which brings to annihilation the wrong sense about man. That would give me a Christ sense. How to get rid of the mortal? By being the idea of God. Aha. Oh, that's it. That's it. Error will cease to claim that soul is in the body. Oh, that's the mortal, soul in body. Oh, she takes up again the question of soul. Now she says that the mortal actually is an error, which really claims that soul is in body, that life and intelligence are in matter, and that this matter is man. I say, oh, yes, that's it. Huh? That's it. That's really the mortal man pictured again, that it is a sense that life, intelligence is in matter, in the body, that soul is in body, and this is certainly an erroneous statement. Oh, I see. If that erroneous statement is brought really to its final limit, it will go out. But how on earth will it go out? How will it be brought to the final limit? I'm expecting somewhere, somehow, an answer. And I go on. God is the principle of man, and man is the idea of God. Again, it seems to be a strange sentence that has to do with principle and idea, somehow similar to that on line 4 and 5, where there was already an indication that the real man is inseparable from principle, just as principle and idea are inseparable. Here again, God is the principle of man, man is the idea of God. Aha. Perhaps they have something in common here. And I don't know, see yet quite what, but I may go on. Hence, man is not mortal nor material. Yes, we have seen that. That she has said. This is a repetition and a strengthening of it. Mortals will disappear, and immortals, or the children of God, will appear as the only and eternal verities of men. Oh, yes, I begin to see now. This is soul, again, which says, all right, that in the measure as we begin to realize the true idea man, oh, gosh, that's the reason why she has said up there in principle that I must see man as an idea of principle, inseparable from its principle, that God of man is the idea of God, that therefore if I see man as the idea of principle, that principle certainly will begin to work on mortals, and mortals therefore will disappear under the impact of that principle, and immortals, or the children of men, of God, will appear as the only eternal verities of men. Mortals are not fallen children of God. No, they can't be fallen children of God. They are in soul because they are. Oh, it always becomes now clear and clear why she had principle there, saying that man is inseparable from its principle, because they cannot get away. If it's inseparable from principle, it cannot fall away from that principle. Therefore, mortals are not fallen children of God. They are actually in principle, fixed in principle. Therefore, mortals are not fallen children of God. They never had a perfect state of being, which may subsequently be regained. I begin to see, God, really, here she shows that soul is the principle of man. Why is it the principle of man? That soul says, because God and God and man are like principle and idea, inseparable. Therefore, man must always have a perfect state of being, and therefore can therefore has never fallen away from that perfect state of being. Therefore, he never has subsequently to regain that state of being, because he was always one with principle. And I just see clearer and clearer that she had to take in as a side remark principle in order to explain the 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 unchangeability of soul and the man of soul has never fallen, so that I get the sense, well, man could never fall, therefore he never has to regain his perfect state. They were from the beginning of mortal history conceived in sin and brought forth in iniquity. Can you hear the whole tone of the counterfeit of soul, the sinfulness of material creation, the iniquity of sin? Mortality is finally swallowed up in immortality, and I get the sense again of the Christ that here is a saving principle at work, that soul is a saving principle, because it says, because soul always only knew the image and likeness of God, man unfallen, therefore mortality, oh, I see now, is finally swallowed up in immortality. This explains the very first sentence on line 6, that error urged to its final limit is self-destroyed, and it begin now to see why she started that way, that there at the line 6 she gave a fundamental law which has nothing specific to do just with the subject of man, but a law that is adaptable for everything, that if something is erroneous, it has the seed of self-destruction in itself, here applied to the question of mortals and immortals, which would show that therefore mortality has within itself that seed of self-destruction, of self-annihilation. So mortality is finally swallowed up in immortality. You have again the terrific sense of the immortality of soul. Sin, sickness, and death must disappear to give place to, that all rings the tone of soul. Soul exchanges the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. So sin, sickness, and death must disappear to give place to the facts which belong to immortal men. And a side note, mortals are not immortals, is actually what she is talking about, except that in that side note you don't get the sense of the Christ which is in the paragraph, namely saying that really the true man, the idea of principle, that true man is really swallowing up mortality, is therefore a savior to mortality, and therefore has a Christ touch. Learn this, O mortal. Oh, she has been telling me all the way through that man is an immortal. That man is idea and not the mortal. And now she talks to me and says, learn this, O mortal. So I feel, I have to see something that actually as a student here, I am still at the point of believing that I am a mortal, and therefore I have to learn something. What do I have to learn? Learn this, O mortal, and earnestly seek the spiritual status of man, which is outside of all material selfhood. Again, a great sense of soul. Soul is always outside of something. Soul is never in something. Soul is never in body, in matter, in the flesh. It's always outside. So here Mrs. Eddy lifts us out through the resurrecting thought of soul and says, lift yourself out of thinking that you are mortal, and earnestly seek the spiritual status of man. That spiritual status of man she has explained in the first paragraph, which is outside of all material selfhood. So I begin to see that I live and move and have my being not in the body, but outside the body, not in a town, but outside of place and time, not in a period, not in the 20 centuries, not in America. I live in a realm of soul, in the realm of ideas. I have never lived really in a material selfhood. Remember that the scriptures say of mortal man, as for man, his days are as grass. As a flower of the field, so he flourishes. For the wind passes over it, and it is gone. And the place thereof shall know it no more. Well, that really is a scriptural description of what she has said before, that mortal, that error urged to its final limits is self-destroyed, that mortality will be swallowed up in immortality, so that we see the order in this paragraph saying that in the moment as we lift the concept of man out of a material selfhood into that realm of the idea of principle, which is without time, without space, into the realm of ideas, that if I do that, that brings the mortal to the point of disappearing, and the wind goes over it, and the place thereof shall know it no more. As if she would give us now the rule of soul, the rule of Christ, how we can free ourselves of mortality. A marginal heading is imperishable identity. Again, very clearly a tone of soul that the true identity man as idea is imperishable, that the mortal concept of man is perishable, and the wind passes over it, and the place thereof we shall know no more. Whew, I said to myself, what have I learned up to this point? Up to this point I have learned, and I begin to recapitulate for myself, always when one has done a page or two pages, one should say, what did I really learn? What is really the line of reasoning? And perhaps I go back and just take those big paragraphs and say, yes, first he has shown us the focal point of spirit, that man really is spiritual, is a spiritual idea. And then has shown through the seven the perfect state of a spiritual idea. Then we have seen that in the next paragraph she says, quotes from Truth of Soul, from the 6 days of creation, that man has dominion. How do we get that dominion? So the next paragraph says us, you should have dominion over what? And so the next paragraph shows the true identity of man versus really the counterfeit of man, the mortal, and depicts the mortal. Then she goes on and shows, but you know that man is an idea of principle. Then error, urged to its final limits, will disappear. Therefore, if you lift thought up to the true idea, identity man, to the immortal man, then mortality will disappear. How do you lift yourself up? The last paragraph shows that if we see that the idea man is not in body but outside of all material selfhood, that this is the Christ to the situation, if I will be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me, the Christ says, and therefore the other side of the coin will be that the mortal man disappears and its place shall be known no more. So I'm feeling actually she has already showed how we save ourselves from being immortal. We are a Christ to ourselves. That's Christianity as a Christ. When man is a Christ to himself, man at the point of Christianity is a Christ to himself, a Savior to himself, that's a Christ. So Christianity as a Christ is always that we begin to realize the true idea. And if we realize the true idea, that is the Christ under which the counterfeit belief yields. It's exactly, you see, it's that place in the Christian Science textbook where the chapter on the signs of being is, Christianity as the Christ. And if you remember, that whole chapter of the signs of being shows what? That the realm of ideas is the Christ to every situation, so that under the impact of a true idea, the counterfeits disappear, yield. And this is a summary of that standpoint here too. So that up to this point, I already have gained quite an insight into not so much what is man, but even more than that if I know what the true idea man is, that this would be the Christ to all mortal, to the all mortal learn something, and how we can save ourselves from being immortal. Well, that's as far as we have got. I think we should stop here in order not to break up the subject. So we make a break here.